Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me as always is my co-host Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is an after midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut, porn, or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a bit more adult content and language. So if you find the show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have up to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. For tonight's show, Rex and I ran a contest with the artwork of Carl Appel, a Dutch artist from approximately mainly from the 1950s, late 40s to the early 2000s. In particular, we featured one painting of his titled A Crying Crocodile Tries to Catch the Sun. But we did give people options. If they didn't want to paint that right to that painting, they could, and they knew his artwork, they could, or they wanted to do some research, they could choose another piece of his artwork, or they could simply write to one of these 2 phrases, trying to catch the sun or a crocodile standing tall. And we got a nice full contest. A nice variety of responses to the prompts, and it was cool to see that there were people who chose to write to the provided artwork, and there was ones who chose to write to different artwork of his. So I, for one, am definitely looking forward to delving into tonight's poetry. And hello, Rex.
What's doing?
Well, like I always say, I'm just happy to be hanging out with you
and other cool poets, if possible. And, you know, just as always, keeping busy. It's just that time of year that I absolutely just love the weather. Not too hot, not too cold. I feel like I have a tad bit more energy than usual. But I also feel like my allergies are really acting up because I've been cleaning areas of my house, like down in my basement, that have gathered dust around knickknacks and such. So, you know, but it's all good. And how about you? What you doing?
Not much.
All right. Well, I have to say that what are yours? Have you ever seen Carl Apple's artwork before?
Nope.
All right. Well, he has. It's interesting because it's very dramatic in its strokes, very bright in color. It almost a lot of it looks like those childhood paintings come to life. He did have a formal education in art, but decided to take a different approach as he grew into becoming his own person, his own artist. And really, there's kind of almost a sense to me of wonder and innocence. He was also one of the founding members of the Cobra group, which is I can't remember. They're not abstract. That's realism. Now I'm blanking out. But anyways, there was an art movement that didn't last too long, but like from 1948 to 1953. And he actually had one piece of art, and again, I'm blanking out, but that caused so much controversy that he lived in Dutchland at the time, I think, and he caused so much controversy that he ended up moving to Paris, France. But he will not be the first. He was not the first, and I'm sure not the last artist to have controversy caused. I see Robbie says he checked out the art a bit before tuning in. Very cool. Very cool. I always like it when people check out artists, you know. Art prompts are simply one of my favorites because I love talking about poetry. I love talking about art and funny videos on the internet, but, you know, that's kind of limited. Anyways, what do you say, Rex? Shall we get this ball rolling?
Absolutely. Mark is up. Go ahead and push the game they love to play.
All right. And we do have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
The Game They Love to Play by Martha Gettle. A frog and a kitty cat meet every day. They have such fun as together they play. First the frog, then the kitty on top, as over each other they hop and hop. Such friends they are, I must say it's true, so many fun things they find to do. The one they play more and more, their favorite is leapfrog for sure. So if you're out one day in the bright sunshine and you run into something that blows your mind, just smile and continue on your way. That's the way the frog and the kitty cat love to play. End of poem.
Great read, Martha. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. All right. I screwed that up. You might as well lead off. I run that one the wrong way.
Oh, Rex. Oh, my goodness. You're just wonderful. You make me laugh. All right. So, well, first of all, she doesn't have a link to it or it's attached to a poem, but Martha wrote to one of his statues. What's the other word for a statue? The type of art that you, I'm blanking out a simple word here. Sculpture, that's it. He was also known for his sculptures, and he had one called the Cat and the Frog. And like I said before, there was a childlike innocence to his artwork, and Martha captures that really well, in my opinion. I like how this is a tale that young and old can find delight in. And it's great all the way through, but I really like, such friends they are, I must say it's true, so many fun things they find to do. The one they play more and more, their favorite is Leapfrog for sure. It's fun and delightful. And what are your thoughts on this, Rex?
Well, it reads like one of those kiddie storybooks, but there's a moral to it. It doesn't matter who the playmates are, as long as they enjoy each other. That's all that counts.
You know, I'm really glad you brought that up. I think, because that is an important part of it. There is, just like an Aesop's fable, there are, you know, oftentimes, you know, a nursery rhyme, there's a moral lesson. You're right about that. Very cool observation, because, you know, it really shouldn't matter and doesn't matter who do you decide is the right playmates for you. So very well said there. All right. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Chasing Sunlight by Betty Page.
And I'm guessing you're reading this one?
Oh, no.
Okay. All right. Chasing Sunlight by Betty Page, and it goes like this. Embracing pure warmth, surfing Malibu's blue waves, rise to glide down smooth, diving back in swift, delicately floating high, awaiting next sets. Joyfully I swim, chasing sunlight and cool waves till I ride on home, glistening in sun, orange citrus bubblegum, tanning on the beach, sipping on shave ice, Hawaiian tropical sweet, bubbly pink champagne, and poem. Ooh, I like that. That is just some fun, delightful imagery that makes me want to go to wherever she is sipping her Hawaiian tropical sweets and bubbly pink champagne. And Rex, your thoughts on Betty's poem?
Malibu Beach. Gotta love the West Coast beaches with all the sun and the surf. Not to mention all the bodies rolling all over the place. This is just a note to the enjoyment of the beach life. Playing the sun, tanning, the sweet treats, whether it's shaved ice or pink champagne.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm not really much of a beach person myself, so going to the beach really isn't an enticing idea to me, but what I really like about, well, first of all, I like about your comment is that you mentioned that it's just really about enjoying the life, and, you know, enjoying the moment there and the simple pleasures. You know, what I like about this is the fact that you could tell that Betty, I mean, it seems to me that Betty is writing about stuff that she truly enjoys. And it's not stuff that's big or grand, you know, it's the surfing, the swimming. Even I like chasing sunlight, embracing pure warmth, or orange citrus bubblegum tanning on the beach. You know, just the whole idea of even just enjoying the warmth of the sun, you know, and, you know, just know, just enjoying life in general. It's a wonderful poem that reminds us to keep enjoying life.
Well, the orange citrus bubblegum just might be the sex wax.
Oh, okay. I was thinking it was just the joy of chewing bubblegum, but you know what? You might be right there. Or maybe it's the wax for the surfboard.
That's what they call it, sex wax.
Oh, okay. Okay. Ah, well, I learned something new. Huh. Well, yeah.
And you got a
call. And got a what?
You got somebody on the phone.
I know. I've already brought him on.
Right.
Welcome, Robbie.
Hey there. How's it going, guys?
Hey, Robbie.
Hey.
How you doing?
Not
going
too bad.
Good.
I've had a chance to listen and read quickly the poem that was just read. When it comes to the beach, there's something I like about, very specifically about the energy of even what's inspired by it. Like, there's a lot of techno music that I listen to that has, like, whenever it has, like, saying in reference to the beach, like sunshine or something with the word beach in it or, you know, or related to it in those songs, there's just a certain vibrancy. And I found, like, in this poem, I felt that too. There's just something about that when you write to the beach. It's a very specific feeling I get that I like. With the way the sun is portrayed and everything else, it's a very specific environmental thing that comes through for me whenever I hear poetry or music or something like that related to
so
the beach. And it always produces something very pleasant for me.
That was an awesome comment. Now, are you a fan of the Beach Boys music then?
Not particularly one way or the other, but one thing I do enjoy more and more when I listen to older music is that a lot of it is brighter. It's just more like in the way things are now, like you have music with really, you know, like almost X-rated lyrics now. And just the general messages and that are kind of morose and I enjoy that about 60s music and 80s in general is they both have, again, I will use the word vibrant, energy to it. So that's something that I value more and more, especially since, especially right now, the world's in such a stressful kind of stressful kind of a feel, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I see that Rex has put up the next poem for us after Herman Charles Bosman by Eric Svensson, and we have a recording for that. All right, gentlemen, 6 minutes and 8 seconds. Grab your cup of tea, sit back, and relax.
After Herman Charles Bosman. Just as a mellow yellow pizza pie, full moon eye, sat itself down on the ridge, I saw it through the lattice work of a huge umbrella thorn tree. Right before my eyes, while kivit tweaked, talked in tall savanna grass, white heron flew in slow V formation, mostly to conserve energy after a real scorcher day. Blinked 3 times to check my vision. The apparition stood clear as crystal. Tall silhouette of a crocodile standing tall. Sudden jackal gibberish close by cajoled, my disbelief. With utmost caution, stepping like that Pink Panther fellow, intrepid bush walker ventured forth. Boldly, as pointed ears Mr. Spock would do. Early evening phosphorine shimmered all over the tall fellow. This happens in Africa after a hot as hell day. A few sips of icy cold lager to rehydrate. Maybe a swig of whiskey or brandy. It's a natural phenomenon, this otherworldly dusk light. Add to this a mellow yellow pizza pie full moon eye. Feeling a tad moonstruck like sheer. With Livingston, I presume, the savannah grass was parted with due decorum. Having observed aardvark and warthogs, I tried best to keep my tail down in the advance. Cute little dust cakes slapped on my ruddy red cheeks for camouflage. Must say I felt just like Rambo on a mission, Rocky mission. After a long, hot haul, I reached a rocky outcrop. Just like nature knew, I would one day need this defense. Lizard-like, I moved up against the moss-covered boulders. With red October periscope eyes, I reconnoitered. Standing things tall, stalwart crocodile waited for me like Godot. I cleared my throat in an authoritarian kind of way. Excuse me, how do you do, old chap? We African bushwhackers are always well-mannered. First reply was a Jemima Southern Belle sob. Then I saw it, a perfect tear shaped, sparkled like the Kimberley diamond on Queen Elizabeth's coronation crown. My dear fellow, such grief. Right, I followed suit. A tear shaped like one of Grace Kelly's pearls formed. What do you weep so deep, dear fine fellow? Now folk from beyond the great blue waters would have thought this all very strange. Laurel leaf crowned red-faced beer belly bushwhacker, hardy crocodile standing tall in the mellow yellow light of a pizza pie eye full moon. But, yeah, in my waka waka vuvuzela South Africa, we don't ask too many questions when crocodile tears are shed. Like lazy leopard lying on a thorn tree branch, we take time to digest the many wonders of social media sent our way. I was trying to catch the sun. Ruddy, rudimentary education had taught me a thing or two. Not unlike Down Under Crocodile Dundee, I unsheathed my tungsten hunting knife. End of poem.
Great read, Eric. thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're not able to call in and you write for our shows, then getting a recording from you is the next best thing, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. I tell you, the more I read and listen to Eric, the more I truly appreciate his ability to tell a story and add in such wonderful dashes of wit and humor. And Robbie, now, since you're the new body in the room, you get to comment first.
I've heard many of his recordings, having tuned into your show for a while now, and he has quite a bit of recordings, and he has a very singular way of reciting his poetry, and the there's a very singular sort of structure to it all that's interesting. Like you said, it's very much a storytelling, and his imagery, like just like in his other poems in here, his imagery is very unique, and the thing that I like about it is that one image threads into another, and what I liked in this too was that he had the one image that was anchoring everything throughout, the yellow pizza pie, full moon eye, and I like when repetition is used well like that. It helps to anchor the, especially when it's a longer narrative like this, it really helps to have that anchoring image so that people, you know, don't drift off, or yeah, it doesn't cause confusion, and it grabs the reader's attention so that they're, you know, focused on the poem. And this is almost like almost like prose poetry. And it's interesting to hear prose poetry, you know, versus regular poetry. And the last thing I was going to say, it's particularly the images at the end that I found interesting, unlike Down Under, Crocodile Dundee, and Lazy Leopard. And that's the thing with those images, he attaches the kind of what's iconic about the image to the image itself. Like, not, he doesn't just say Crocodile Dundee, he says Down Under, Crocodile Dundee. And of course he was, you know, famous, you know, that's not a knife, this is a knife. And, you know, and it says, I unsheathed my tungsten hunting knife. So, yeah, I like that he does that with the image in particular in his poems. He has, like, the entire thread, I guess, is the best way to put it, of what the image is, not just, like, a singular part of the image. And he doesn't do it with 1,000 words either. You know, Down Under, Crocodile Dundee is just 4 words, so... You know, it doesn't take up
Absolutely.
Half of another, yeah.
Right, and the thing is because he uses pop culture, that was a great comment. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, a lot of times he uses pop culture references, and in such cases, most people know the references, and so you don't need to have, like, an extra stanza. You just need that line. And yeah, I agree. Having the reference to the big yellow moon, and I guess it would be a reference, or the sun, mostly. I suppose it would be a reference to the sun, giving the prompt. Did have an anchoring effect. So really good observations there. And and Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Oh, it is loaded, but it's purposeful. It's like the opening. Mellow yellow pizza pie, full moon eye. You got a double reference for Donovan's song, the mellow, they call me mellow yellow. And the thought with the pizza pie full eye comes from Dean Martin, the moon, when the moon hits you, I'm like a big pizza pie, it's amore. You get a sense of love for the outdoors, because that's what he offers up. The kiwi, tweaking it in tall savanna grass, the heron-flume V formation. And then his thought, blinking 3 times to check his vision, thinking he's seeing something he shouldn't. And the crocodile rolls in, and he's offering up that sort of the Pink Panther. And then he throws in that noted reference to Mistborn, being that he came from an arid place too called Vulcan. So that kind of hits off the note with Africa after a hottest hell day. A few sips of ice cold lager to rehydrate. Maybe a swig of whiskey or brandy. Maybe he's already ventured into that realm already. Now he rolls in the Melio pizza pie full moon eye a couple of times, and then you get that moonstruck, a double note to the movie and Cher as well. And then hitting on Livingston, looking for Stanley, so to speak. In the dress with Rambo, he's got some flex on his cheek, which gives him that little camouflage look. And then you got the Red October, the movie that points to something evil lurking within all that's going on. Then looking for Godot, the Sphinx, and the tears, the crocodile tears are perfect thought, especially dropping in the Kimberly Diamond on the Queen's coronation crown, and then Grace Kelly as another drop to a crocodile tear. But he throws in this thought. We take time to digest the many wonders of social media sent our way. They're like the lazy leopard lying on a thorn tree. Everything walks within a little dangerous connection because he finishes out with those that last two lines. Robbie just hit on that, like down under Crocodile Dundee. That's also purposeful. You've got that outback feel from Crocodile Dundee, but he's running the same sword through the African savannah. And I unsheathed my tungsten hunting knife. It is a direct reference to those crocodile tears being shed and the leopard in the thorn tree. We know what to do with things like that when they crawl around here. Does everybody else know what to do when they crawl around the social media pages?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like that you brought up all those different references, Rex, and I especially like that you focused in on the social media line, because to me that really was a very important part of the poem, because you know, I felt like the crocodile tears represented how fake people can be on social media, and and how oftentimes they are like that leopard lying in the thorn tree branch, you know, waiting for somebody to come along. And there was really, to me, the beginning of the poem kind of like seemed like somebody going through the jungle of social media. I mean, once you go back up, like at first it just kind of seems like maybe it's somebody going through the jungle of life. I like how he had all those references like Pink Panther and Mr. Spock and, just kind of trying to refresh yourself. Having observed aardvark and warthogs, I tried best to keep my tail down in advance. Cute little dust kegs slapped on my ruddy cheeks for camouflage. That makes me think of how oftentimes we just want to observe. We don't want to get in the middle of the pack. We just want to observe and see what's going on. So excellent observations there and great comment. Great write, Eric. Thank you. And what do you got for us next?
The Point is Falling Like an Arch by Self-Rising Mojo. Limbs on the walnut trees contort like lines on faces that have seen so much they don't dare move. Today is the 1st of October. Their branches are peeping, not with eyes wherever they may be. It's the sound of small birds singing as if to describe that they were flying just seconds before. The next left is a dirt road inclined to reach all the way into a glen where sun is little more than light as a feather, cooler by 5 degrees. A corridor of 2 feet in the air, let them go. If they are yours, it's certain they will return, or at the very least, go down enough you catch them on the way back up. And pump.
great read there, Rex. I think your voice just fits really well with Mojo's poetry. And I really always appreciate the way his poetry flows, almost like a stream of consciousness. And Robbie, your thoughts on this poem?
A small part of it reminded me of the concept of what's called the forest wide web. It's a newer point of view, or a newer theory, I think. And it's the idea, I've mentioned it in the chat once or twice before, that the idea that there's so much going on in the forest underneath the surface, literally and figuratively, that people don't realize, like there's all the pheromones going around with the animals, all the chemical signals and everything the plants send, and that, and it's so much that they liken it to the World Wide Web. There's just so much information going around. And a small part of this poem reminded me of that, because of how the branches are personified, the branches are peeping, not with eyes, wherever they may be. There's the sound of the small birds. And then towards the end, where it talks about a corridor of 2 feet in the air, let them go. If they are yours, it's certain they will return, or at least slow down enough you catch them on the way back up. And that, to me, gives the idea that when you respect nature, nature comes to you, and it's the reward that you get for being in nature without trying to dominate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, yeah, I remember seeing you mentioning that in the Late Night Poets chat before, and it makes sense to me. You know, we have the World Wide Web, but, you know, so does nature, has their own version of it. And I like that you bring up the thought of, you know, treating nature with respect so that it will come to you. So, excellent comment.
And they didn't come up with their own version of Facebook, so kudos to them for that.
Right? Oh, yeah.
There's no Facebook in nature.
They might. Thank God for that.
It would just be horrible.
Oh, my gosh. There was one time years ago, I was sitting on my back steps in Superior, Wisconsin, with a friend of mine eating Jujubee's candies. And I actually got a squirrel to come up and take a piece of candy out of my hand. And which was funny because I didn't even think it would, but I tried and it did. It was like, oh, I'll take that. But
I think they take just about anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's so different. Like, you will actually, when I grew up in the middle of the woods, I very rarely saw squirrels, because there's enough trees close together that they stay in the trees. It's when you start to live in a town that has just enough trees to keep the squirrels there, but they have to, you know, run across yards or, you know, telephone poles in order to get to the next tree. You actually see a whole lot more of them when you live in town than you do in the country.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense for sure.
And absolutely, absolutely. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, that first half kind of hits on the thoughts of the day is the 1st of October, so especially with the bear thoughts with the limbs on the walnut trees, gives that notion of summer waning. And the second half, the next blessed is a dirt road inclined to reach all the way into a glen where sun is little more than light as a feather. Kind of hits on that sort of the road less taken. It's cooler by 5 degrees because there's shade. A corridor of 2 feet in the air. Let them go. If they're yours, it's certain they will return, or at the very least, slow down enough you catch them on the way back up. There's that kind of notion, even though it's October, that it's still warm enough to enjoy. But it will come again on your return trip to this arena. So you will see that fullness of the walnut trees, and maybe a little cooler when spring arrives before the sun hits. So kind of hits on a duality in season.
I like that. I like that. I like that you brought up the walnut tree and the duality of the time, like, you know, how you mentioned that it's October, and it just, as the poem says, it's just a little bit cooler. And then there is that kind of that sense of knowing, you know, or at least maybe it's not knowing, because we all never know for sure, but hoping that once again you'll make another cycle and come to that, you know, that point again where that weather is just perfect. You know, I really like how this right just seems like so personal, like we're taking a walk with him. The day is the 1st of October. The branches are peeping, not with eyes, wherever they may be. It's the sound of small birds singing, as if it describes they were flying just seconds before. You know, there's just something about taking time to listen to the birds and to their songs. And I like the use of the word a corridor of 2 feet in the air. Let them go if they are yours. Turn, they will return. You know, I love that whole idea that, you know, if you let something go and it comes back to you, then it was meant to be yours. And it doesn't even have to be something actual physical. It almost seems almost like a representation or a metaphorical release of letting problems go. So, excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next?
The African Wolf by Diane D.
All right, and we have a recording for this one. So, let me find that. Here we go.
The African Waltz by Diane D. Standing wilted, drinking salty teardrops. Serpentine slippery existence. Grappling with the recoils, unveiling the jostles. A wrecked dance of the tangled on bedraggled stone vines in African jungles. And minted maidens exchanging secrets, tussle with string orchestras, with triangle shocks and seizures and resistant storm balls. In flight are the shaven pebbles on swept cobblestone streets in brick alleys. Hyphens clipping tails in scribble mixes, swinging among pluck strips, like paper clips dancing the tangle, and loose leaf confetti falling, or a mime and a mimic wrestling on riots and pieces of titters and tatters. Play the rhythm of the villagers' walk as they trek through tied off thistle bales with walking sticks of paint specks, thumb rolls and palm fingers, bongo drums slowing its saunter, clicking streamers of silver-lined staples. End poem.
Oh, yeah, I suppose I should unmute myself and leave comments. Oh, my goodness. That, you know what? That poem with her read and the energy of the background music just had me so mesmerized that I was waiting for somebody else to leave comments. But, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. Wow, that was awesome. I really liked that. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, that opening stanza kind of gives the impression of the harshness of life. Standing wilted, drinking salty teardrops, through jaggled stone vines in African jungles. There's a heaviness in the tone in that. And she hits on that. And minted maidens exchanging secrets, the tussle, the hustle, the bustle, of the life things going on, even in the harshness. And we'll see the, like paperclips dancing, their tangle, loose confetti, leaf confetti falling, or a mime of mimic wrestling, on riots and pieces of titters and tatters, sort of picking on this or that. That the life is streaming itself. And the last one, the villagers walk. There's kind of a beat to their movement as they carry off the thistle bales. And picking streams of silver line staples. There's a nice note to the tone of the music itself. No matter what is going on, how harsh the environment, there is a touch of noted music to everything because it keeps people not just moving, but it keeps them festive so they're not overly burdened with the life state that might be harsh itself.
That is a really a great comment. Of course, you always have great comments, but I particularly like how you touched upon how important music is to people in an area and a culture where life is rough. That I think, you know, it just, like you said, it gives an opportunity to enjoy something, you know, to appreciate something and to take time to almost feel as if the burden of weariness has been removed. So wonderful observations there, Rex. And I do like how this does come across as kind of moving through life and taking on the challenges of life. Just an excellent write and great comment. And Robbie, your thoughts?
I was kind of getting the same impression as Rex was that with the music and the thing I find is that it's like the rougher the environment, the more vibrant and vital the music, because it's like, you know, the more the environment is pressing against you, the more you're pressing back, right? And that very much gets reflected in the music, and the whole feel of this poem really spoke to me because lately I've been really getting into African music, especially like traditional African music. I've been practicing some African traditional stuff on my kalimba, and so that really spoke to me with how I've been fascinated by that of late. And the thing is with the painting, like, she paired it well with the painting because the painting has those kind of African colors, the tanny browns, the reds, like those rusty reds in that, and just the general impression of the painting, I felt lent itself very well to an African waltz. And I think it's the last stanza in particular that emphasizes the whole idea of how the music is integrated into their lives and the tone of that music, you know, being vital but relaxing. The bongo drums slowing its saunter, clicking streamers of silver line staples.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think to listen to the music and watch the dancing of any culture is absolutely intriguing, especially, you know, like if you go with the traditional dance, like the African, Native American, even, you know, like the traditional, like, you know, if you go into some of the Eastern European, like the Hungarian and stuff, you know, those kind of where they have traditional dances, I think is just really intriguing. The picture she wrote to was titled Amorous Dance, and you're right, it does have those kind of colors. I really like how this is about people, you know, who struggle through life, you know, and work hard. And I like the erected dance of the tangled on bedraggled stone vine in African jungles. And I really like to play the rhythm of the villagers' walk as they trek through tied off thistle bales with walking sticks of paint specks. She's really created an intriguing atmosphere in this rite, beautifully written and very well done.
Well, there's a very, There's a very good example of a very quickly of a dance that's so tied into the culture and what they experience, and it's called the La Tarantela. It's a Spanish, I think, dance, and there's this tarantula in one of the areas there that it's, you know, has a very potent venom, and they believed that in the past, like if you dance, you know, that all that energy, all that movement would be like getting the venom out of your body, right? And so the La Tarantela, I think, is the tarantula. And I think that more than any other example I've come across is a superb example of how directly the music and the dancing can be tied into the culture and its experiences.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think another example of that would be like the Hawaiian dance where they tell a story with their hands as they're dancing. Well, great poem and wonderful comment. And what do we got going on next, Rex?
Hyaloid by T. Michelle. And Robbie, why don't you get that a read for us, please?
Okay. So, hyaloid. Evening leavens, I skip the blue of a mournful moon as my hands rinse in fossils of flashbacks, imprisoned in a millennia of suffocating blemish. Bring the sun close, closer to taste where gravity has got knee folds right in the alley of a rocky road, lifted off the Septuagint. Voice of a glass print trails off the sleek chin of a sapphire swan diving into fire, the hurled breakage. I inhale shabby mist of August breeze waltzing around Ash Alameda, strung light filters through the horizontal louvres filling the passage with a dismantled slogan. Arched scrolls illuminate in an arc of burnt silver musk. The whole cavalry demands a debt owed be repaid. Bones of solace brought out of shell. Pay to save my uncracked ribs, trapped under shapeshifter's loft. In a polluted slumber of scratchy vinyl, neither clear-eyed nor weepy. And that is Hyaloid by, I was looking for the artist's name here. What was that? Oh, yeah.
T. Michelle.
T. Michelle, yes, T. Michelle.
Wonderful read there, Robbie. Thank you. I have to say, I always really like T. Michelle's writing. Just a beautiful use of creative imagery. And Rex, your thoughts?
All right. You got to start with the title, Hyaloid. It's the artery that runs off the ophthalmic artery in the eye. So that gives a thought to where something's seen. And I like the opening, Evening Leaven. I like that thought. It gives it a heavy note, but it also offers up that thought to evening blooms. I skip the blue of a mournful moon as my hands rinse in fossils of flashback, and there comes the hyaloid thought right in the opening angle, imprisoned in a millennia of suffocating blemish, and then lifted off the Septuagint, which is a Greek version of the old Bible. So there's a lot of the flashback, the Septuagint, it's on that notion of customs, old customs, beliefs, being chained to them, so to speak. The hurled breakage that kind of represents the glass being hurled into fire, or the fireplace, break the glass, or even to the broken glass of a marriage, where you step on the glass when you've been wed. And what else we got here? Arched scrolls illuminate in an arc of burnt silver musk. Again, thoughts to the tradition and Calvary, demands a debt that would be repaid. Calvary, again, more religious tone. Pay to stay my unfat ribs. Thoughts of pain and suffering. The scratchy vinyl hit that notion of, again, age-old belief. And the end hits on that notion of being unsure of all of that because you're neither clear-eyed nor weepy. There's a notion of maybe old beliefs and traditions have worn out their welcome, so to speak.
That was a real thorough analysis, and I'm glad you knew what either knew or looked up the definitions of those words, and especially title words, because I feel like that did add a lot of clarity to the rite. And, you know, I think you make a really good point about the ending, how, you know, there's that kind of sense of uncertainty, you know, which makes sense. I think a lot of us, you know, who have traditions, grew up with particular either traditions or religions, you know, and then come into being our own person and thinking for ourselves. You know, on one hand, you have the comfort of tradition, you know, and something you've grown up with and that you can pass on. But on the other hand, you have the opportunity to explore this a world of knowledge and different perspectives and kind of start forming your own thoughts, at which point you kind of come to almost like this inner junction. So I think you just definitely had some really great observations there, Rex. And Robbie, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Thank you. Well, the way that the poem was structured, both in how you see it, the lines laid out, and how the lines flowed, I think very much reflected kind of the fragmentary look of what looks like stained glass on the top, because it's we see how the lines are laid out in like little blocks, and then each block is kind of like its own little image within itself, which I enjoyed. This is one of those poems where I'd have to read over it a couple of times to get the full impression of it. But at the end, I particularly enjoyed, "I'm a polluted slumber of a scratchy vinyl, neither clear-eyed nor weepy." Like, to me, that's just such a unique image. And I have lots of records myself, and it's just nice to have the image connected to something that isn't usually used too much. You know, the vinyl isn't commonly used as an image in writing, and just the fact that that's something that I work with a lot, because I have my records that I want to figure out what I could play in clubs if I ever DJ or something. It always helps a poem to connect to you when it's has a unique image like that in there that pertains very much to something that you're doing, especially if it's something that's a little more specialized, and you think to yourself, well, you know, nobody else talks about this, or nobody else looks at this. So, yeah, that last image especially, I really enjoyed.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was really creative use of imagery, and it really does help, when the imagery stands out. I really like this all the way through, and I like, Bobby, that you mentioned that the kind of the shaping and the parting of the stanzas does reflect the shapes in the painting well. I think I can see that. And I really like the sleeping of a sapphire swan diving into a fire, the hurled breakage, I inhale shabby mist of August breeze waltzing on Ash Almeida. Strong light filters through her horizontal lores, filling the passage with a dismantled slope. I really, within those lines, is the swan dive representing death. I don't feel like it's an actual literal death, but almost like this metaphorical death of someone getting rid of their old self and becoming a new self. I think it's a wonderful, thought-provoking rite and just very well done. All right, and which way are you leading us now, Rex?
Trying to catch the sun, huh? Not really. I may only care.
All right, and we do have a recording for that, so I'll go ahead and find that, and here we go.
Trying to catch the sun. not really. It's 2 p.m. I'm still in my house coat, shoved into the couch, staring at the ashtray, wondering how many more butts I can crush into the grizzled swamp without it overflowing. I count the minutes down until my daughter arrives with the girls. Now, don't get me wrong. I love my granddaughters. Just on other days and in older versions. The oldest is a teenager now, which is kind of cool. The other day we had an interesting talk about boys. I told her to stay away from dickheads, and she answered, okay. Then asked me, what's a dickhead? I did think of answering any guy you'll meet till you're at least 25, but thought that was getting in a bit too deep. Plus, based on the specimens I've dragged home lately, just a lie. So I just gave her the dictionary definition. Anyhow, well, I guess the least I can do is open the damn curtains, which I immediately regret, seeing the cold sweat gleaming on the back of a jogger as he runs by. Oh, and the hell with it. I stuffed myself back into the cushions, grasped the bag of chips and remote control, trying to bury my guilt under some Netflix flick. If only it could fucking hurry up and rain already.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. Oh, man, I always really like how there's this raw, biting sense of reality in her writes so often. I thought this was very cool. And Robbie, your thoughts?
This is very much one of those slice of life type of poems to me. And it perfectly reflected the feeling we all get sometimes, like, you know, where we're just so feeling so lackadaisical on a given day that, you know, it's 2 p.m. and, you know, we still haven't really gotten to the full swing of things, but we're just so out of it that we're just like, whatever. and it also, like, towards the end there, where talking about opening the curtains and stuffing yourself back into the cushions and watching Netflix, and it's kind of reflective of that, again, that kind of day where, you know, we just don't have it in us for going out with the gusto, doing this and that, and this is more not, it's that's the thing, it's not really an admonishment of anything one way or the other. It's just a full honest acknowledgement of that feeling of, you know, well, you know, today's just that kind of day, so I'm just gonna, you know, like the pop culture thing, you know, I'm just gonna Netflix and chill. And so that's the impression I got of it overall. I'm going to, after this now, I'm just going to stay on the line for a couple more minutes, but then I'll hang up and listen through, continue to listen through the chat.
All right. Sounds good. Well, I really appreciate you calling in for a bit and taking time to, you know, share your time with us and offer your comments. And that was a great comment there. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's deeply sarcastic. I'd say it was self-deprecating, but it reads more like self-flagellation, because she offers up a couple of things. I love my granddaughters just on other days and in older versions. And I told her to stay away from dickheads, and she answered, oh, okay. Then asked me, what's a dickhead? And I Plus, based on the stresses I've dragged home lately, just a lie. So I gave her the dictionary definition. The immediately regret opening the curtains, and oh hell with it. I stuffed myself back into the cushion, which is where she started. I'm still in my house, so shoved into the couch, staring at the ashtray, wondering how many more butts I can crush into the grizzled swamp without it overflowing. So it's someone who's kind of had done that, hitting on that noted walk of shame in the morning. I said, fuck it. They're coming over. I don't care. Let them see the worst.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. You're right. It just has that kind of self-flagellation feel. I really like that part about where the teenage granddaughter asked what a dickhead is, and she offered up she had her thoughts and then offered up the dictionary definition. I thought that was fun. And opening up the curtains and just seeing that sweaty jogger and immediately regretting, you know, that you opened that curtains. And, you know, I have to agree, Rex, this just has a really great tone to it. I like how it's a combination of her thoughts and what she shares out loud. And, you know, so many times, I mean, and we all have children we love, and many of us have grandchildren or nieces and nephews that we just love and adore. But there are some times where we just want that time to ourselves, and especially at the younger ages, like toddlers or preschool, when they're constantly bombarding you with questions, it can be such a wonderful age, but at the same time, it can kind of be like, okay, let mommy or let grandma just have a break, maybe with a shot of whiskey and nobody asking her questions. So this just a wonderful bite of reality and very well done. All right, where are we going to now?
Trying to Catch the Sun by L.D. Mason. And it's all yours.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right, this is Trying to Catch the Sun by L.G. Mason. And it goes like this. He was really going for good thoughts, everything fine and dandy and fun. After all, he's got to concoct his own version of pixie dust if he really wants to get things properly done. Do crocodiles really cry crocodile tears, or is it merely their way of shedding sadness? And he'll never, ever get to Never Never Land if he lets those thoughts creep in representing badness. Those colors seem to clash upon the virgin canvas white, but in the end, it is the artist himself who feels how to put it right. Mix and match, build up those oils, set them free, let them run. You've got to be completely different if you'll ever be trying to catch the sun. So I like that one. Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, LG. I'm glad to see that she wrote for the contest. And what are your thoughts on this poem, Rex?
First one, the crocodiles. Spelled wrong. I'm saying that's deliberate because
the damn
machine would have made sure of propping up the right words, so there's got to be a little bit more to the crocodiles. The croc meaning, life can be full of shit sometimes, crocodiles, so that you don't shed any tears over that croc. You just get down to business, especially since you dropped in the pixie dust up just a couple lines before that. And the sort of never, ever getting to Never Never Land, is that reference going right back to the crocodile tears. You can't let something creep in to distract you from that which you were doing in the first place, which is putting this piece together so that he can be different enough while trying to catch the sun in the first place.
Yeah, and you know what? I like that you pointed out the Never Never Land reference, because, and that makes, you know, and I really thought that was clever that she put that in there, because, you know, with the crocodile being part of the story, the crocodile who swallowed the clock and was always chasing Captain Hook, being part of the story. And yeah, that ending, I have to agree. I really liked that ending, in the whole idea that, you know, you have to, and I like how it becomes almost like a tribute to the artist and the painting, and how you have to think, you can't catch the sun by thinking average, by thinking like everybody else. It happens by thinking different and expressing yourself in different ways. And I thought this was a really cool write. And I found it interesting that she put the word badness all in capital letters. Do you think there was a purpose for that, Rex?
The what?
How she put the word badness all in capital letters. I thought that was intriguing, and I was wondering if you thought there was a...
It's a kind of rebuke these days. Badness. Can't let that badness, or that whatever reference point you want to use badness for, it's always deliberate with it, almost yelling at you.
Okay. Yeah, you're right, because when people use all capitals when they're typing online, that is means that they are yelling. So obviously, at that point, she really wanted to, you know, yell and grab our attention. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, and where are we moseying on to next?
What I See by Zenny VB. Contemplating this obscure image, I perceive a lemon light above which the sky creates itself. Infinite blue, utterly untouchable, images swim in the abstraction. I sense Chagall floating, trying to capture the sun, wanting back who he was. Or could it be an aquamarine sea, mothering, drowning soul? Flashes of purple velvet, hint of a living fire where vulnerabilities hide, an inexhaustible canvas, a playground where painter and poet converge, apparitions born from a brush, now silent, inking poetic expression. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I really like Zan's writing. I like that she chose a different picture, painting by Carl Apple. I also like that she referenced the artist Chagall. I sense Chagall floating, trying to capture the sun, one back who he was, or could it be an aquamarine sea, mothering, drowning souls? What I really like about this write is it seems as if she's contemplating the artwork and all the possibilities of what it represents, the things we see physically within the painting, and the things that the colors, you know, and strokes represent to us that you don't necessarily see, but you feel. I like how this is a kind of a representation of analysis of the painting. And I really like an inexhaustible canvas, a playground. And I think it's so important that she put in there a playground, because I think oftentimes people can take studying art too seriously. And I think by putting the word playground in there, she reminds us that this is not only an opportunity for the artist to play and have fun in expressing themselves, but also for the poet to play and have fun and express themselves. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
the opening hits on the notion where she went with Chagall, because the color representation kind of walks that note of Chagall itself. It's trying to capture this unwanted back who he was, kind of a notion, maybe a earlier time, since he was born in 1887, died in 1985, a Belarusian Jew. We hit it pretty good. The color thought goes well, purple velvet, living fire, vulnerabilities. Another thought, inexhaustible canvas, a playground where painter and poet converse. That was a nice touch considering the abstract imagery involved. And again, apparitions born from a brush, now silence, thinking poetic expression. The thought of just letting the flow walk from the brush right to the canvas itself, as if writing it, but with paint instead.
Absolutely. And I like that you mentioned about just, you know, letting the flow, you know, I think that was I think your whole comment was a great observation. But yeah, there is a kind of element of just the release and just going along with the flow. So, excellent comment. All right, and where are we going to next?
Well, you've got Mamuor.
All right. And of course, I'm going to guess that it must be my turn to read. So, all right. This is To Reach by Mamuor, and it goes like this. Reach up to a blazing sun, tears flowing down rough scales. Short limbs cannot extend high enough to touch it. Still, I bask under the sun's terrible gaze, enjoying the warmth. The scent of sunlight on the swamp tickles my nose, waking me from deep slumber, and so I rise. Once again, I reach up, straining to grasp that which I cannot. Someone called out, branded me a fool, saying my work is futile, that it will not bear fruit. Still, I keep reaching high, higher and higher, until my limbs fall off. When that happens, I reach up with my open mouth, trying to swallow the sun and make it mine. Alas, it is not meant to be. I overreached. Back to the swamp I slump, a crocodile crying salty tears. End poem. Ooh, I really like that. She has such a gift for storytelling. And Rex, your thoughts?
The thought of, hits on that note of the crocodile throughout being logistically banned to the swamp, so to speak, and people can walk that way too, being banned to the streets, so to speak, walks this, that same type of thought, and someone just labeling you an idiot. You can keep going with the reach out and trying to do what you're doing, but you will not bear any fruit, nor work yourself out of that which you are. And still, sort of a client reaching out, climbing higher and higher, until my limbs fall off, and it hits on that note again, being grounded in the moment, back in the swamp, and lost in the moment because you reached, you've tried, yet nothing came of it. So, a crocodile crying salty tears hits on that note of feeling sorry for oneself instead of getting back up again and trying to make the effort.
Absolutely. I really like how you mentioned that, you know, it's all about the crocodile, and yet the crocodile can be a representation of people and how they treat each other. Because, you know, oftentimes if somebody is trying something that we think is impossible or trying something different or, you know, or has a dream that's different than anybody else's, there's kind of that idea of mocking people. You know, so I like how there's that duality, how it's on one hand, it's a wonderful tale about a crocodile, but at the same time, like you said, it can represent humanity. The short limbs cannot extend high enough to touch it. Really kind of reminded me of some of those memes and cartoons, comics that they have about Tyrannosaurus Rexes, like Tyrannosaurus Rex trying to make a bed. I found it really intriguing and relatable that the limbs, the crocodile's limbs fell off, and instead of quitting at that point, they try to reach with their open mouth. And you know, I think that kind of, to me, seems like the whole idea of how we exhaust all possibilities, and to me it's like the sulking back to the swamp and the tears kind of represents the frustration of giving all your best to something and failing anyways. So just really a wonderful, thoughtful write and very well done. All right. What do you got for us next?
A Sleepless Night by Diane Thorson. The sidelong glance of a Cranach Venus is trying to catch a midnight sun. Within diaphanous fabrics of sleeping dragonflies, a restless night yields, red and rich like India. Morning sunlight and birdsong, I am gored by your boughs. My thoughts are still wreathed in black roses, contours full and lush. The blooming redness carves a cinnabar dragon on the plinth of onyx night. Now the night is dying quickly as the garden dies in summer heat. I am missing something jeweled. Something rapturous remains, evergreen and poisonous as you. My eyes, owls of yellow pollen. And Paul.
Great read, Rex. I tell you, Diana Thornton just always has some wonderful creative imagery. And I really like within Diaphanus's fabrics of sleeping dragonflies, a restless night feels red and rich like India, morning sunlight and birdsong. I'm gored by your boughs. All the way through this is absolutely amazing. But to me, it's the whole idea, how there's so much wonder in the night. But if you're struggling to get some rest, to get some sleep, to shut your mind down, you don't always take time to look at all those wonders and to appreciate them. There's kind of this darkness in it, and especially when it gets towards the end where the sun rises and the bird song comes, and you just, it just isn't something that you want to see. You don't want to see the beginning of the next day. You don't want to try to move forward to daylight when you haven't even been able to rest your mind at night. And I really like those lines, now the night is dying quickly as the garden dies in summer heat. I am missing something jeweled, something rapturous, named evergreen poisonous as you, my eyes cloud of yellow pollen. I really like that ending, my eyes cloud of yellow pollen. And I think that is the brightness of the sunlight just coming in, and just that, there's almost a sense of us being, to me, overwhelmed. I really thought this was a very beautiful and thoughtful writing, very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Maps it out, that first stanza. The sidelong glance of a Cranach Venus is trying to catch a midnight sun. A Cranach Venus kind of gets that notion of a marble statue, ever looking out, trying to see what's to be seen. And then a restless night feel. Red and rich like India, morning sunlight and bird song, I am gored by your boughs. And then the darkness began, my thoughts are still wreathed in black roses, contours full and lush, deep in the throes of insomnia. The blooming redness carves a cinnabar dragon. I like that thought. Swelling of the eyes, the cinnabar dragon. It's on that note of the burn and the itch. Since the onyx night, no sheep here. I've got nothing but cinnabar dragon and an onyx night that will not lull me to sleep. Now it's dying quickly, just like a garden dying from the summer heat. There's the wilt in the moment, and the thorn evergreen and poisonous is you. My eyes, clouds of yellow pollen. Oh, that hits on how badly the eyes feel the next morning, catching the sun.
Oh, that's a really good point there. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. But it does almost have, like you said, that whole idea of allergies, keeping somebody awake, or the red eyes from too much smoke. I think that was a really cool observation there. And yeah, I have to agree that stanza with the dragon, that was a really well done one. Excellent comment there. All right, and what do we got next?
Frog and Cat Influence by Pink Fairy.
All right. Frog and Cat Influenced by Carl Apple by Pink Fairy 5. And it goes like this. Primary colors resonate in my soul, bringing my art to life, making it dance. I do not toss things together without inspiration. Frog and Cat by Carl Apple have clung to my heart. Simple lines, but intentional, immediately in touch with my childlike self. We throw paint onto a canvas, not willy-nilly, but without full intent. Carl's influence live in my dendrite pool. I capture my youth. She wields the brush. I begin singing a song of joy as I paint splashes onto a canvas. But how to make it three-dimensional? This is part of the joy of Apple. Sure, he had a few canvases, but his sculptures were more enthusiastic. I wonder at the idea of a sculpture class. Am I ready? Am I good enough? Am I excited enough? I sure am. End poem. Oh, I have to say that was just absolutely delightful. And I certainly truly believe that whatever Pink Fairy wants to take on, she is more than ready enough. And your thoughts, Rex?
I like the thought would be... the dendrite pool in that third stanza, just on that notion of with that which excites the nerves into life, that which brings a sense of wonder and joy, the childlike self hits on with that. There's a notion that there's an appealing thought that comes with the frog and cat as a sculpture itself, because it offers up that childlike motif, but throwing paint on a canvas, not willy-nilly, but without full intent. So there's that notation of making an effort. And then she hits on the thought with the questions that rolls through the last two stanzas, how to make it three-dimensional. I wonder at the idea of a sculpture class. Am I ready? Am I good enough? Am I excited enough? I sure am. But the notion is of trying something new and giving the world to see what comes out of that experience.
Absolutely, absolutely. And yeah, I really like how you mentioned doing something that just brings complete happiness and complete joy. And I think that line that you mentioned where you said, where it said, we throw paint on canvas not willy-nilly but without full intent, was a really important line in how, you know, you don't, it's not completely without thinking, but at the same time, you start a process of an art piece of artwork and you kind of just see where it takes you. But, yeah, I think this is just really a delightful write, a wonderful tribute to the artist himself and his style. And I really do like that ending. I wonder at the idea of a sculpture class. Am I ready? Am I good enough? Am I excited enough? I sure am. I really like that exuberant confidence that comes through. So, excellent write and very well done. All right. What do we got next?
Ray-Ban by Ia. Either you'll bring out my zest or repress it. Either you'll be the loved or the lover. Either you'll make me laugh or I'll make you. Either way, have fun catching the sun or else. Have fun.
Great read, Rex. I thought, yeah, this is a wonderful brevity. I like that you kind of took this different approach. And I like the title, Ray-Bans. You know, the pair of sunglasses, like, this makes me think of that song, My Future's So Bright, I Gotta Wear Shades. I really like how this is one of those that are really difficult to separate, but because every line just flows into the next beautifully and perfect. But I really like, either you'll be the beloved or the lover, either you'll make me laugh or I'll make you. And to me, there's this real sense of not that the things are going to be the same every time, but that sometimes a person needs to be a lover and sometimes needs to be the beloved. And sometimes, you know, like one person needs to have their partner make them laugh or vice versa, or needs to lean on their partner. You know, and to me, there's kind of almost in the ending line this sense of flirtatiousness. You know, that I find it's just really just interesting how so many thoughts can come from such a few short lines. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. What are your thoughts?
The title itself gives the thought to the notion, Ray-Ban. Because it hits on that thought of what's hidden behind the Ray-Bans, because you don't get to know. That's why the thought comes out, bring out my zest to repress it. Be the beloved or the lover. Make me laugh or I'll make you. Either way, have fun catching the sun or else. Notation is, hey, you've got that which lies behind the Ray-Bans. And the only way to do that is make the effort, because I ain't taking them off.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. That is a really good point, you know, because, yeah, you can't see through the Ray-Bans, you know. And so, yeah, there is a really good point that you made there of how, you know, the person has to make the effort. You're not just going to easily reveal yourself to them. So, excellent observation there, Rex. And, all right, where are we going to now?
Be Numbed by NJ.
All right, and I remember she told me how to pronounce her name, but I think it's like Anja. Yeah, if I remember right, I apologize. I know she messaged me before, and hopefully that's right. This is Benumbed by Anja, and it goes like this. We, like ships, have become neither moored nor steered, but adrift with cargoes of travel weighing down our laden vessels We are clouds without a sky in which to drift, stars without a universe, withered leaves dying on a vine, numb to human touch, bereft souls trying to catch the sun. Well, that was just an absolutely beautiful brevity. And Rex, your thoughts?
Yes, and that's going. Neither moored nor steered, but adrift with cargoes of prevail waiting down our laden vessel. Clouds without a sky, stars without a universe, with it leaves dying on a vine. And this the darkness and the center of that which is. And it's a lost, not anchored in the movement, adrift, because no one is paying attention to that which is. Thereby, there's no beauty anymore. There's no humanity. There's just an emptiness. That kind of hits on the notion of really being lost and bereft souls. Kind of hits on the sort of being partially soulless. It's still trying to catch the sun because there's no belief, no real belief that is walking within it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I that was some really great observations there. And I have to say, I just really like this right in the whole idea of feeling like we're being empty and having no purpose. And I like that you put separate that line, numb to human touch. There's, you know, it makes me think about how it's been made, you know, how there's that thought, not thought, but that they know how important touch is, you know, how to the development of an infant, of a child, you know, and how even as adults, it's so important to have that nurturing human contact. I really like the imagery of this all the way through, but especially stars without a universe, withered leaves dying on a vine. And I like that she went with the vine as a representation, because the vine is something that strangles, that, you know, just takes the life out of whatever it clings on to. And so excellent, right? And what do you got for, what are we going to next?
All But the Sun by Duncan Ross Bell.
All right.
Steps into darkness, blind to the light, focused is failure, no reason for sight. The shame is a shiver, shakes you can't fight. The blame is a whisper, that flame was a sight. Ponder the pending, believe in the end. When rain falls sideways, the wound will ascend. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. I have to say, Duncan has just a wonderful rhyme and flow, you know, and I really like this all the way through. And I know you just read it, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on it.
All right. Blind to the light, focus is failure, no reason for sight. Shame is a shiver, shakes you can't fight. Shame is the whisper, the flame was a fight. And it hits on shame, well, that's hit on sort of shame. But more than that, there's almost a biblical thought within this. Flame is a whisper, it hits cat tongues that offer up the spite behind closed hands and doors, the scarlet letter, so to speak. There is a note to a walk of shame, kind of. The flame itself was that which burns you, but it comes off a flaming tongue. Ponder the pending. Believe in the end, when rain falls sideways, the wounds will ascend. Kind of hits on that notion, even with those first two stanzas of getting back to that. You got to believe in something, because you don't have any belief in that first stanza. You're in the darkness. Your focus is failure and no reason to sight. You're blinded by the thoughts that have that come within the second, the slights thrown at you. The thought of ascension within the last stanza hits on that which comes with death, or that which comes with actually holding something to faith.
I really like that thought, and I think you're right in your observation. It really does have a kind of a sense of feeling ashamed of not wanting to step out into the light, of wanting to stay in the dark, because in the dark, people can't see. I like the thought of that ending stanza being about faith, being almost like about a rebirth. I like this all the way through. Especially the shame is a shiver shakes you can't fight. I like that he brings in the shame is a shiver that shakes you can't fight, because it's that whole idea when something hits us really hard emotionally, whether it's anger or shame or whatever it is, we oftentimes physically react, and it's beyond our control. And I also like that end stanza, ponder the pending, believe in the end. When rain falls sideways, the wound will ascend. And really, to me, I don't know, there just seems like to be such a sense of healing. And I like that he uses the word ponder the pending. And think about what's to come. Think about that there could be a chance to heal. I really thought this was a very thoughtful write and very well done. And, all right. What do we got next?
Desert Incarnate by Lillian Rose.
All right. Let me just get back to Late Night Poets. I'll give that a read. All right. Desert Incarnate by Lillian Rose. She is the current mistress of them all, her brittle kiss and golden purview scald. Abraded husks assouged upon the wind, like hollowed scabs against her arid skin. The whispers of her faded sigh depart, her weathered lips endow but don't impart. She slept the moon, a desert beauty waned, but hold to weep. You'll know her heat again. End poem. Oh, I think that is a wonderful brevity with just beautiful rhyming couplets. And what are your thoughts, Rex?
Well, I like the offset rhyme, all in skulls, wind and skin, waned and again. They work for everything she's offered up. And it is the desert incarnate. There's a duality here. She's the coolest mistress of them all. A brittle kit in gold and purview skull, a braided husk has to wage upon the wind, like hallowed scabs against her arid skin. That offers quite the thought to the desert itself in sunlight. And then you get the back end of it, which is just as brutal, because you go from the scalding heat of summer to the thought of winter can be, not winter, night can be brutally cold in the desert. Whispers fade and depart, weathered lips and down, but don't impart. Again, that sort of an offering, but nothing comes with no warmth. Desert beauty wane, but hold to weep, you'll know her heat again. Then there's that return to that which comes in the morning with the risen sun, the heat and warmth.
Absolutely. And, I have to agree. This was, you know, wonderful personification of the desert, of the sun. And I like how you mentioned how it can, you know, cool down at nighttime. And then, you know, like just the whole rite, just really wonderful to me, personification, a wonderful look at the desert being both a beautiful and a cruel mistress, and how, you know, that could even represent that kind of woman who is both alluring and dangerous. So just a wonderful rite and very well done. And what do we got next?
Trust Me Blues by Thomas D. You write the lyrics, I sing the song. You can trust me not to get it wrong. Yeah, I stir the pot till the meal is done. You can trust me to be the one. Don't hesitate, don't ever wait. It is a matter of fate. All that is left is to set the date. Fairy tale dreams sung by someone who looks too good gets the inner meters raging when good sense is on vacation. At our weakest, when we need holding, even if we aren't admitting how tender is sexy, gentle, how done we are strong. To be a way to validate so one's not prey, then it's got to be a resource that connects you to the force. So you can be sure, instead of praying, there's something more than a good maybe. And
all. Great read there, Rex. Yeah, and I forgot to change that Tom wouldn't be able to call in. It's always nice when he can, but he's got a busy weekend coming up and had to head to bed early. But I have to say that you did a wonderful read of that. I always like the way he oftentimes takes a different and creative take on the prompt, how he looks at this more as if there's really a sense of humanity in the artwork. I really like where he says, yeah, I stir the pot till the meal is done. You can trust me to be the one. And then fairy tale dreams sung by someone who looked too good gets the inner meters raging when good sense is on vacation. You know, when it comes to being attracted to people or being fooled into thinking that something that isn't love is, we can often common sense just walks out the door, you know. And I just really like how he makes this about that oftentimes, you know, we're just too busy catching what we think is the sun. I also like how he had the play of words with pray and praying, where he said, to validate so one's not prey, P-R-E-Y. And then he said, you know, so you can be sure instead of praying, P-R-A-Y-I-N-G. You know, I like the whole idea that, you know, there's this connection, this force, and, you know, just the idea of instead of spending all your time praying or praying, why not spend your time, you know, thinking and absorbing a kind of like a common sense. But you read that wonderfully, Rex, and of course I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
Well, the first three stanzas hit on the notion of trust me, not to get it wrong. I'll stir the pot, meal is done, you can trust me to be the one. Don't hesitate, don't ever wait. It is a matter of fate. All that is left is set the date. There's a notion, there's duality in that. I stir the pot till the meal is done, and you write the lyrics, I sing the song. So there's a duality in there. It's neither male nor female, but both. And fairy tale dreams, this done in the italics angle hits on that notion of fear and maybe holding back wonder. Not wonder as in the joy in wonder, but wonder as in what is real, because Your thoughts are raging in another direction. Someone looks too good. The inner meter is raging with good senses on vacation. The notion of hormones raging and nothing else is actually in gear at the moment. And the thought was how tender, sexy, and gentle comes on real strong. And then the thought with there has got to be a resource that connects you to the force. There's kind of a Star Wars note that force is with you. Maybe that's a gut check. You know, if your gut tells you something's not right, you shouldn't be questioning it because it's easy. You can sit there and pray all you want, and you might still end up being prey. So maybe the thought is, quit asking the questions. If you're asking the questions, then you've already got the answer.
Amen to that. Yeah, absolutely. You're definitely right about that. The gut check is very important. To listen to your own instinct, very important. And I do like how you mentioned that those first couple stanzas are about a trust. And I think that's such an important thing. So just really a great observation. Very well said. All right. Well, I think that was our last right on the board, wasn't it? Did you have something that you wanted to share?
Nope. And that was the last one.
Okay. Okay. Well, then, to kill a couple minutes, I'll go ahead and share my right that you may or may not have heard, but I'll read it anyways. And so, and this is not obviously the same artist, but I thought the artwork I wrote to was colorful, and it's of a lizard, which is, you know, related to a crocodile. And this is a sun god basking, and it goes like this. He is the lizard king, a mosaic of stars and rivers, curled toes exploring his surroundings, keen eyes observing his kingdom of time abandoned. He is made of earth, air, and electricity, atoms of infinite possibilities, by the wonder of a sun god basking, a tuning fork of universal light, knowledge of forever, weaver of knowledge. He speaks in his silence, the expressions of a thin skin enclosed in armor, willing himself to be released until he becomes starship poetry, soaring to uncharted realms, landing upon the shores of specters, a firm hold placed on the firmament between land and sky. He is a million drops of water searching for a home beyond what fate has given. He is iridescent flaws in the flow of eons. He glorifies the song and poem.
Be right there. Oh, that's easy enough. It's your generated thought of Jimbo. It could only be Mark.
You know I love my Jim Morrison.
Next to
Hubert, he's my second favorite man.
Tuning fork. He speaks in his silence, starship poetry. What else we got here? Iridescent floors. He glorifies the song. Who else could it be?
Oh, well, it could have been you. I could have been writing about you. I mean, you have some starship poetry.
Not with the Lizard King up front, so, nah.
All right, Jim all Bird. Right. Well, yeah, but you're still my favorite, and he's my second favorite, or, well, it depends on the day. But, yeah, you're right. This is mostly a tribute to Jim Morrison and his poetry, and, you know, thank you, Rex. I appreciate the comment. And I appreciate I appreciate your starship poetry.
I'm all starship.
You are. Well, let's go ahead and let the people know what we have coming up for shows. So why don't you say what we got going on for Rhythm and Rhyme and After Midnight?
What do we got for Rhythm and Rhyme? Oh, we've got Someone Please Get Me a Doctor. A lot of Doctor songs to pick from Van Halen to Nelson to The Doors to Motley Crue, David in that role. And, some quotes for Tuesday by Charles Bukowski. There's about 16 I dropped. So,
yeah, you definitely offered up a nice variety. Very cool. And, of course, join us later tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company, and then Gray Eyes Smith show on Saturday. Me and Victoria Frost are filling in for Afasiana for Part Sinner, Part Saint, 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time on Saturday. Then 10 p.m. on Saturday is Gray Eyes Smith's show, Bad Company. He's actually running a pre-writes contest for your favorite or best poem that has a SoundCloud attached. I sent you that link, Rex. Make sure you go there and
check it out.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And, of course, for any of our shows, poetry readers and commenters are always welcome. And another contest that I have running that I'm looking for rights for is for our next Twisted Tuesday show, which is I have song prompts from Rodgers and Hammerstein. And I think that's going to be a really fun show. I'm looking forward to that. Well, as always,
Roger and Hammerstein.
Rodgers and Hammerstein, yes. They're known for their songs that they wrote mostly for musicals, like The Sound of Music. You actually have written to one of their songs because you've done a couple of parodies. Of my favorite things from The Sound of Music, and that is one of their songs. So, So I think it's going to be a fun show. I'm looking for. I think the Doctor show, that Rhythm and Rhyme, is going to be fun. And of course, I always love Bukowski. So, man, it's just going to be a great week of poetry. And thank you as always, Rex, for everything you do. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, and to Robbie for calling in and for holding the board. To everyone who is listening now or will be listening later, we truly appreciate you all. All right, gang. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.